Yes, we're here to discuss the week in technology as normal. Joining me, I've got an absolutely brilliant panel with a couple of new boys on. We're doing well for new boys, thanks to Wheaters. Starting us off, top left, Scott Johnson, no less.
Oh, hey, what's going on, guys? Thanks for having me on your show.
Mate, pleasure. Absolute pleasure. Thank you for coming. How have you been?
I've been fine. Been busy. There's a lot going on in my world, and it only gets worse for the next month. But that's because we're about to have my big annual Frog Pants community meetup, mashup, party called Nerdtacular, and it's going to be crazy, and I'm not ready, but I will be. But between now and the 4th of July, it is a little painful for me. But it's nice to be able to come in here, not think about that for a while, talk about tech with smart people from over the pond. I'm good.
Well, we talked to Tom Merritt about him coming over to the Bash maybe this year, and he said, no, I can't, I'm at Nerdtacular. But we've actually had to move it this year to the 11th of July, so it's the
week. He could just back to back go to ours and then rush right out again.
Well, he's a rich man. I don't see why he can't hire the Concorde for the night and come over.
I know, he's just gonna buy Patreon at this point.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Git. Love him to bits. But Git. Next to him, it's Nick. How you doing, mate?
Yeah, good. Yeah, you?
Yeah, excellent. No worries. Now, are we allowed to talk about where you work or not?
You can, yes. I work
at
a small but hopefully growing bank in Edinburgh, but UK-based.
All right, okay. Your background is?
I'm a digital strategy manager, so when people ask me what I do, I say I'm a digital dreamer, because I've got the rest of the guys who go and actually do the important stuff like delivering it. I just go and tee up the execs who go and find a pile of cash to invest in the stuff we need to get done, which, as you can imagine, in banking is quite a lot, because we're kind of a bit behind the curve. But yeah, we're getting there. We've got big, ambitious plans. So it's all coming together.
The bank is well known for its free thinking and innovation, isn't it?
It's a hotbed of technological advance, I agree.
From 3 years ago.
Oh, you're being generous.
That's good. And your surname's Gray as well. I finally remembered it. Great. What an arse. Next to Nick, it's Bart Bouchard, Mr. Freeze, Dr. Freeze. How you doing, bud?
I'm doing just fine.
What's been happening since the last time I upset you on your own show?
What do you mean upset? That was a great show.
Was it? Have you had feedback?
Oh, no one's complained.
Don't have the English tosser on again.
No, absolutely not. You know, we were delighted to have you on. I thought it was good.
It was great, mate. It was
a good contribution.
You actually inspired me, mate, because I went away last week to work in Devon for 2 days. And while I was there, I went out one morning to take some early morning shots.
Ooh, lovely.
And I took some tights with me. And I've given you 3 tips on how to use ladies' tights when you're a photographer. There you go. So if you have me on again, I shall explain those 3.
I'm glad you explained the whole thing, because when you said shots, you were either hunting, you were drinking, Now we know you're taking pictures. So.
I'm a photographer by trade. Sorry, I should have said.
That's all right. But then all of that being said, I was like, well, what does this have to do with lady tights? Like, you were painting a really wicked picture for me.
Well, it goes back to the days when you didn't have Photoshop to save your ass with a vignette or something right. like that, you know. So.
I'm always afraid that I'm going to end up on some sort of hit list, because, you know, when you say in a podcast, oh, I like shooting trains. Doesn't sound good.
Yeah. No.
Yeah, don't say you want to shoot Robin Hood Airport. That's the key.
Ooh.
Yeah. Next to Bart, it's Righty Ace Host.
Hello, mate. How are you?
What a job you did.
You like that?
I may step away from the big show permanently, I think.
Blue Peter's got something to live up to, haven't they?
So in the background there, you have the Hangoutosaurus.
Oh, it's still here. There you go.
Superb, buddy.
You like that? Yeah, I can't live up to your technological awesomeness.
Well, that looks far better. And to be honest, you've captured the essence of every single person that was on last week.
I give it a go, don't I?
It does look like them.
You want some more then, do you?
Oh, absolutely. I think I want my avatar like that on Twitter. Bloody brilliant.
I didn't have time today to do everyone who's on the show. I thought I'd have time, but it's been a big day today. So not enough time, but I will do some.
But now Scott's a proper artist as well. So he'd be impressed by that. Knocked up in an afternoon.
Yeah, some would make that argument. I might make that argument. But yeah, I'm all about surround yourself with weird, man. Like, whatever it is, that's what you should do. I wish I had the video up still. I'd be looking at whatever we're looking at.
Well, no, what it was, because we've got the whole Skypeosaurus-y thing type going on here. In a little virtual studio and green screen. Wrighty decided he couldn't do without that, so he drew caricatures of every person that was on the show last week, and they're damn good.
That's fantastic.
And he drew logos of all the sponsors as well, hand-drawn.
Ah, very nice.
And they're very good. I've got to say, I'm impressed. I had no idea he could draw at all.
Yeah, we could hang out. That's great.
Yeah, you should. Watch those collaborative draw things that Kirkle does.
Oh, yeah. I like a, what do you call that? Add-on or something or whatever it is.
That's loads
of
them.
We could totally do that. That'd be a lot of fun. To pick some kind of tech topic, go crazy with it, become the next big memed out thing on the internet, make millions of dollars, retire early. See, the whole thing.
Mapped out. Get Len Peralta in as well, because he's
good.
He's brilliant.
Yeah, Len's a good man. He could do it.
And last but by no means least, with no audio whatsoever or a mute switch...
Because
he was
you're
choking.
Me by surprise there.
Yeah, you were choking. I'm sorry.
Chinese earlier on. It's a cream of some young guy.
I didn't say that.
How are you?
The man who drives the British Tech Network, Paul Wheatley.
Oh, nice. Yes, thank you.
You've had a bad day, ain't you, dude?
It's not been a great day in terms of my family's cars. So.
I'm presuming you're not allowed to talk about what happened before the case actually goes to court, though.
No, of course I can.
Because it may prejudice your conviction. I mean, defense.
No, I was in the wrong. It was all me. I got caught for speeding. I was completely fair enough. I was going 16 miles over the speed limit. It was a complete fair cop. However, when they were checking, they found that my MOT ran out 2 weeks ago.
So. Oh, God.
That was a little bit annoying. And on my way home, as I was driving home, thinking, I'm going to tell the wife this. Jeez, £200 fine, blah, blah, blah. She sent me a photograph of the front of her car. She'd driven in the back of a van this afternoon.
What I'm interested in that story is why she thought that sending you a picture of the damage would improve things.
Well, I think it was her kind of loosening the blow. So instead of kind of saying, I've smashed the car, and me going, my God, where's our kids? Is everybody okay? She sent a photograph. So I would go, oh, that's not actually that bad. But, but you know, the funny thing was actually, and I was just thinking about this earlier, just before we started the show. Scott, I was listening to Current Geek last week when I got pulled over by the police.
Oh my gosh.
I was listening to the section that is talking about driverless cars. And I was just, I was right away kind of thinking, yeah, this is a time that I could really do with a driverless car.
Yeah, the irony of all of that stuff. I mean, we were, that discussion got pretty deep into the whole like ethical question of whether or not we should be able to control our own driving destinies or whether a car should be trusted or, you know, all these sorts of things. And the irony of you getting pulled over in the middle of that whole shakeup is pretty funny. I'm glad you're fine, though. And yeah, well, I mean, you would have maybe benefited from some kind of on-rails transport at that point, I guess.
Yeah. I definitely would have done it. It would have just at least kept me in the speed limit or something. But
That's hilarious. Well, I'm glad everything was fine. Yeah.
You should have said...
Hey, yeah, no, everything was fine. Everybody was fine. It's just we're unfortunately... I've had to put the car in for an MOT, so, and my wife's car's away to get the bonnet fixed and... Blah, blah, blah. It's we're both out of cars tomorrow, so I don't know how I'm going to get to work.
Go ahead, Nick. You had something to add there.
No, I just like Paul getting pulled over when you got the kind of cops and he's saying, "Hey, look, no hands." driverless.
Wow.
So anyway, tomorrow's another day.
Mark Shepherd in the chat room suggesting that Paul should have given the cop one of Brushwood's get out of jail free cards.
Yeah, those are handy, man. He needs to bring a bunch of those to the Nerdtacular when he comes, so we can just, you know, just in case, man. You never know what's going to happen at a party like that.
I work in London at the moment, loads, and I just get the train because they give me a gin and tonic on the way home.
They do for real?
Oh yeah, I go first class and they give me gin and tonics.
Oh, no way. That's great. Where I live, we have some really cool public transit, like light rail and stuff, and it's great and everything, but they don't have any amenities like that. It's just straight up, am I going to sit next to a stinky guy or not? Those are your amenities.
Yeah. Well,
can you sit at all is probably the first question.
That's a good question, too. Dublin. I don't like taking it. I like the wide open road. I'm one of those guys that doesn't want my self-driving Google car, not just because that thing looked like a stupid face, but because... I don't want to, I'm just of a certain age where the idea of letting go of that wheel and letting a machine do it kind of freaks me out, despite the fact that I'm ready for implants, bring them on, I'm ready for all kinds of weird tech to take over my life, but automating my just automating the trip is one thing, but then completely removing any control I have over it, that I don't know why that feels like a stone too far. Whoa. But
no, if there's at least a big red button that you can bang on and go, stop!
Yeah, my other option, I've got no public transport because I live about 30 miles south of Edinburgh, so it's just the wilds of the UK that I live in. Maybe not so much as Wales, perhaps, but certainly it's pretty close. I have no public transport other than bus. And frankly, yeah, I would prefer a robot rather than the Neanderthals that drive the buses around here. So I feel a robot's going to be a far big upgrade from that.
Yeah, but do you agree they all need to be Johnny Cab robots? They need to be like little dudes, like torsos and heads going, hello and welcome and that kind of stuff? I mean, I'm all into that.
Yeah, straight out of Futurama, something like that would be absolutely spot on.
Oh, he's waiting on the peasant wagon tomorrow morning, is he?
I am, yeah. I'm going to have to go on the bus tomorrow morning, yes.
Say again, Nick, what did you say?
Oh, I just remember the film. When you get road rage, you rip the guy's head off in the Johnny cab. I like that.
Yeah,
that's the way to deal with it. You're going to crash, you smack him on the head, he stops. There's all kinds of stuff you could do, and you'd be conversational, and you could ask him questions like, what's the weather like today? You could all Siri up that thing.
Yeah.
That's how, if they're going to go this far, if they're going to make it so my car drives itself, at the very least, you got to anthropomorphize some of it and put a Johnny Cab like dude in there, or I am not paying for that.
But this is Google, right? He's going to be just the whole way telling you about all the great products someone has paid him to tell you about.
Ah, that's a good point. I didn't think about that. Yeah. If you like that that billboard you're just looking at, you might also like, and I'll be just, just drop me off.
Oh, with eye tracking technology.
You don't want to go to your destination. You want to go to this much better place. I'll take you there. No, stop.
that's terrifying.
No, see, if it's got eye tracking technology in it as well, anytime you check out a chick or something that's going past, it takes a picture of you checking out the chick, and it sends it to your wife, and then says, what's it worth not to press send?
I'm screwed.
Totally busted.
That's not good, man.
At what point do you feel that you're not a control freak then, Scott?
I don't know. I mean, there's so many good arguments about why I would embrace this idea and not worry about that lack of control, but it really did make me kind of question what limits do I have, or what have I set for myself over my life? And I've embraced tech every step of the way since I was a kid till now, and every time something new happens, I get super excited and stoked about it. So I don't know why this one in particular is the disconnect. Part of it might be my distaste and my not liking public transportation generally. Call me a dyed-in-the-wool American, but I do like an open road and a car and I can put my Taco Bell wrappers wherever I want kind of life. You know, there's something about that for me. So maybe that's it. But as far as where the line would be, Like I say, I'm cool with somebody putting a chip in my head, so when I walk through a grocery line, it just charges whatever my account is, or you know, stuff like that. I'm cool with like Johnny a lot Demonic. Of invasive technology. So I don't think this is me being a prude about security or anything like that. I think it's just give me the automated car, but then once in a while, if my instincts kick in or something, give me a human analog element where I can take over and do manual control. Even in Star Trek and every decent science fiction franchise out there, there is always manual override. They never have a starship or a cruiser or anything that doesn't have some kind of human intervention if you had to do it.
Yeah. And then it crashes.
I thought you guys are half the way there, aren't you? Your stick shift these days, you know, your automatic rather than stick shift.
I'm all stick still. If I ever get a car, my first choice is always a stick because I just love that. So I think there's a, my dad used to buy and sell like classic cars and was really into that stuff. So some of this is just kind of almost genetically ingrained in me with cars specifically. They're a cultural thing and not just a means to an end. I think I can get over that though, because I'm all about electric. I'm all about, you know, I want a Tesla so bad I can taste it. Wish I could afford it. But I can sure taste it. But you know, that kind of stuff really intrigues me, but a little bubbly thing that gives me zero control over the road. And you know what the truth is? If these things happened and I was not too old man about it and I just went ahead and went with the flow, chances are after a couple of weeks, I wouldn't think twice about it. But for whatever reason, I have trepidation now.
Yeah, absolutely.
So before you said that you wanted to put your Taco Bell wrappers everywhere, are you sort of envisaging this this automated driver to kind of be like your mom and checking up on you for leaving your wrappers all over the place?
Well, it depends on how, you know, if they're really good at the AI, the whole prospect is a little bit creepy because, imagine somebody who in their private time might pick their nose. Not saying that's me, but let's say there's a guy that would do that. If you're sitting next to Johnny Cab there, are you going to feel like he knows or he can see you or you know, like at some point we make these, our robots so good that they mimic us enough to make us feel all of the normal emotions we feel around regular flesh and blood people. That's its own bunch of issues. I need him to be straight up goofy. Like I need him to be ridiculously like the door in Hitchhiker's Guide. I need that, you know, that door. I need him to be ridiculously positive and optimistic about everything you do. If he picks up somebody with a gun and the guy puts the gun to Johnny Cab's head and shoots it, yet he's still able to talk, I want him to be thanking this guy. Thank you for riding with Johnny Kerr. You know, I want him to be a complete mess that way.
Would you like
that's
your bullets?
That's what I want. I don't want a really smart human like one. I want a straight up movie robot like one.
I thought you were going to say you wanted to pick
The pressed android. That would be the best one, surely. here am I, the IQ of a 2000. You just want to go and pick up a can of beans from the shop. Oh, really?
Yep, that'd be all right too, actually.
I thought you were going to say you wanted to pick the Johnny Robot's nose.
Just reach over and mess around.
Nose picking for you. Did you notice, by the way, just talked about Taco Bell offers. There's a rumor going round that there's a Taco Bell in the Mos Eisley canteen in the new Star Wars. No. Oh,
Stop it. That can't be right.
Bastards. No.
No, they can't do that. That's got to be a rumor, dude.
It's a rumor, but that's the rumor.
That's all it can be. That there, if they put product placement,
that makes my blood boil right there.
That really irons me up. I wouldn't even. I'm a huge Star Wars fan, but if I wasn't, I'd still be irritated about that. That's like saying, all right, we're making a new Lord of the Rings video game, and in it will be big bamboo and wooden billboards, and on those billboards will be ads for, you know, 5-hour energy drink or whatever.
Yeah.
What do you do? We're like, well, that's the stupidest idea ever. The idea, this is a galaxy far, far away, a long time ago, lest we forget. They don't have Taco Bell. And if they do, it isn't called Taco Bell.
They do now.
Oh, shut up.
See, this now that's terrible. See, now they've got to listen. Abrahams, if you're listening, and I know you do, this man here is a Taco Bell fan and a Star Wars fan, and he says no.
Yeah, see, listen to me. I'm not that big of a Taco Bell fan.
Think about the possible crossover with this, though, right? You've got Mr. Fusion in the DeLorean, and they've got the Taco Bell wrappers inside Mr. Fusion. Fusion then goes back to a galaxy far, far away, and somebody sees the logo and thinks, that's an awesome idea. I'm going to build one of those in the Star Trek universe a long time ago.
Oh, my gosh. All right.
So have we
now
got
now you've described a film I would watch.
Have we got a Seth MacFarlane crossover here now? So actually what we've got is Back to the Future, and the DeLorean turns up in Star Wars, and a Taco Bell rapper falls out, and then before you know it...
Bell isn't born?
Taco Bell has a Taco Bell.
Oscar and BAFTA for everyone. Exactly. Yeah,
it's not a Taco the Clones, is it?
Oh, righty. Oh, mate, that's hilarious.
Oh, my gosh, that's great.
Sorry.
We have a show title. Where's my pen? Jesus.
That's hilarious. Nicely done.
Excellent.
I'm here every week.
Attack of the Clones.
I wish something rhymed with menace, right? Because I would have a good one, like the Phantom something. But there's nothing. So you win. Yeah. You take all the beans.
You can't top that. You just got to move it. Really good. Stuff the week in tech. Let's just have a chat. Bollocks. There's nothing going on.
This is basically every show I do, by the way. This is the format. So I apologize if I launch into what feels familiar to me.
No, this is the most structured show we've ever done.
That's actually true.
Look at last week.
Yeah. Right, stories on tech. Let's Nick, you start us off, mate, because you haven't said much. Tell us what your story's about.
I wanted to talk today about solar roadways, or if you go and look it up on YouTube, solar freaking roadways. What is it? It's awesome. I can see this being transformational. I'm setting it up big here. But imagine if you looked out the window or at your office block, you see these roads or auto routes or pavements or sidewalks. See, I'm sort of dual shifting here for our transatlantic cousins.
Good man.
And if you can imagine that all of that hard surface is replaced by solar panels, big ruggedized industrial strength glass panels that can effectively generate electricity, just soaking up the sun's rays through the day and then playing that back out to you in the form of free energy. So why am I interested? Well, for a number of reasons. One is, we're piling out, you know, I look at my my desk here, I've got about 3 or 4 different gadgets. It all has to get plugged in. We've got to find the energy somewhere. But what's really cool about it, so if I go away from my green tree hugger roots for a moment and look at some of the other stuff, they've got inbuilt LEDs, so you'll be able to change the sort of the display on the roads itself. You can light them. You can imagine Internet of Things. You could get into your car and you could type where you wanted to go, and then the actual road would be pointing where you need to go, and it kind of, you missed your exit, dummy, go the next left. You could actually see it written up on the road. It would melt away the snow from the path in the winter time, because it's slightly heated. It's got a heating element. And then to top it all off, if you do have an electric car, shout out to my Tesla friend, you'd be able to do some induction charging over the top of it as well. So it's pretty awesome.
I was going to say, Matt, I'm on piezo electric stuff.
Yeah, it's amazing. And if you've seen some of the Tesla sort of proof of concepts where they have these panels embedded in the road and they run along and just pick up a sort of micro charge as they run along.
They weren't like kind of like ski electric cars.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. We all sit with the side with a controller. Woo-hoo.
This stuff is really cool, but the only real complaint I've heard anybody make is that, or the only thing they say, well, this is not feasible, is that the tests that anyone has shown as to how this stuff would work and how industrial it is has not accounted for, let's say, 15 years of heavy wear and tear on busy highways, say in a state like California or something, weather conditions that may not be optimal, where shrinkage and expansion happens. You know, where I live, we get very hot summers and very cold winters, and we get everything in between. The idea that the roads couldn't hold up over time, say 15 years or more or whatever, with that kind of wear and tear. Do you know if we're any closer to answering those particular questions in terms of, you know, how feasible this is?
La 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 la. Don't ruin the dream for me.
Even if they can't stand up to the biggest, heaviest highways, there's still an awful lot of, like, I know people say Americans are a bit on the large side, but I'm pretty sure they'll stand up to pavement. We have an awful lot of that around. We all have driveways in our houses. If even we could just get free Lecky out of our driveway, surely that's a great step forward.
Well, no, the problem with piezos is that they work on attraction and retraction, don't they? So you're going to have to go off your drive to get it to work. That's why pavements work, because it depresses and releases. But
it's fascinating, and the idea that, you know, we've already got the space for it, right? So there are roadways already there. So now this is just an issue of replace roadways with this technology. Yeah. So it isn't like you have to figure out to carve out a bunch of new land in countries where it's already, you know, too dense and we're out of new places to put roads. I mean, it does feel, to me, this is really just a simple thing. And I don't know why people are pretty negative about it. I don't really understand why, because it seems like a really innovative, nice idea. Ooh. The real trick is just being able to prove some kind of long-term study, or do some kind of study that replicates the long term, because the long term affects all sorts of things, tax rates and who pays for it, how it's maintained, what happens if a huge chunk of it gets torn out because a semi tipped over and tore it up. Sorry, Lori, I'll say that word while you
good lad.
So something like that happens, you know, then what's the process? Is the whole grid down? Is just a segment of it down? There's a lot of questions about practical everyday that nobody's answering, but the big picture is rad, and I am all in on this one.
Yeah, I think one of the biggest problems. Oh, sorry, did I just talk over this topic?
No, go for it.
Okay. So that one of the biggest problems of the big picture is that I've seen somewhere.
Wheatley's frozen. Hang on, start again, Mr. Wheatley. Start again.
Do you want me to start again? Right, okay. It was really, really interesting what I said the first time. It might not be quite as good the second time.
Okay.
So it takes about 10 years, apparently, for these things to actually pay for themselves. So if most governments kind of have 2 terms, so that's 8 years, they're never going to actually see the benefit of this. So is anybody, any government anywhere actually going to put the money in for this, with the risk that they might not actually see the benefits from it?
Okay, but nuclear power plants take like decades to pay themselves back, and we do that.
We do that, but that's, maybe I'm wandering a little bit outside my comfort zone and knowledge here, but power plants are not necessarily put together by the government, whereas the roadways are.
Not necessarily. Yeah. There's a lot of private contractors do that kind of work too.
Sure.
But it wouldn't surprise me if somebody like, I don't know, Sweden, let's say, or South Korea or somebody says, yeah, we're totally going to do these roadways because we already have, you know, whatever we have now. I don't know if this is true. My brother's from Korea, so maybe I can speak to that. But, you know, our roads now kind of suck, so we're going to put in these, and it's really no skin off our nose. Kind of like their broadband infrastructure, they didn't have to try to support, you know, 80-year-old copper wire phone structures and make dial-up last as long as possible and then DSL last as long as possible before they got cyber and installing new infrastructure. Because they never had any of that to worry about and maintain and justify the long-term cost of, they went straight to fiber and heavy-duty, you know, broadband. They may have the same attitude toward this kind of technology. And then, you know, maybe what ends up happening is we get a decade's worth of proof from some other country that is willing to make this willing to take the dive into the cost, because to them it is almost their first time having to invest in that infrastructure, rather than countries that are hundreds and then some even thousands of years old who have continually just poured money into traditional roadways for them to take the jump. I do think that we just live in a time where people are less willing, I say people, but I mean governments are just less willing to take the longer tail risks that they may be used to take.
It's a great shout. So if you think about it, at the moment, you know, we're trying to have this renewable revolution. And what do you have? You've got sort of wind turbines, you've got sort of solar plants, you've got wind water turbines out in the seas. The thing is, with these little solar panels, actually, you could do them as Ewan said, you can do them in your driveway. And, you know, okay, that might cost you a little bit more than actually paving it with normal stuff, but you're talking small scale here. So you're not having to invest, I don't know what the hell the cost is for a turbine, but you know, you're in the hundreds of thousands here, you know, for a little solar cell to go and try them out. So it kind of, it benefits from being quite small in a way as well. So it feels a bit like a tech startup and being able to fail fast and kind of keep learning. And lots of iterative capabilities. So it's fascinating for me, because I think it just, again, provides an entry level for others to get involved. And just to say, I have put my money where my mouth is. It's an Indiegogo project at the moment, and it's still live. They're still looking for cash. I bought an obscenely expensive baseball hat from these boys. but there you go. They were looking for $1 million, and they're now up close to $2 million. So if you feel like embracing the clean energy future, here's another way of trying it out.
I don't know about the rest of you, but I managed to get a full house there with the business buzzword bingo there from Nick.
Yay!
Yeah.
It's a skill, man.
I just want just to talk about hardness and that kind of stuff. Isn't ceramics involved within solar panels? So ceramics would be pretty indestructible, I would have thought.
Yeah, so they basically take a whole bunch of recycled glass and then mash it all up and create this kind of really deep, thick slabs. And then they've kind of got this layer in between as well, which should be enough to receive the sort of the strength from the sun. And don't get me wrong, they will not be as effective as the ones that you see on your roof. But I think what they're trying to do is they're just going to have the surface area to go for, because clearly your roof, well, we're not like our American cousins with their big houses. So I've got a small little house here, but you know, you're not going to get much out of a roof. And of course, there's an issue with the angle as well, because only half of the day it's probably facing directly into the sun. So, you know, I think they're kind of making up with surface area. So, yeah, they're looking pretty good, I would say.
It's also really interesting because one of the advantages, as far as I'm concerned, is there's never any blockage in this case because the roads are always needing to be cleared, even in the winter under the worst storm conditions. Somebody's got to keep those roads clear. So, assuming they can hold up to whatever clearing.
Scratching,
And I also have issues with, like, what's the grip like? Like, I've hydroplaned on some pretty light rain before, like on a regular road. What is this real thick glass? How are they going to sort of replicate the kind of grit I need to hug that thing?
There's a lot
of questions like that. But because all of these societies are compelled to keep the things clear all the time, it's not like there's a bunch of refuse and crap all over the road until the zombies come, we're fine. Because can you notice that in zombie movies and TV shows, there's always a lot of shit on everything. But anyway, that's not the point. The point is, clear these things off, have them be exposed. It's the perfect thing. It's always open. There's always going to be sun on it every freaking day. And we can finally take advantage of that big fat thing glowing in the sky before it explodes and murders us all. So every time I have a conversation about this, the more excited I get about it. But every time I think about it, it's like, yeah, there's about 30 safety things. But then again, I'll say this one last thing. We are a bunch of human beings who decided some, I don't know how long it's been, 100 years or 200 years, whatever it is ago, that it was a good idea to speed along a road in a big piece of machinery at excess of 50 miles plus hours, depending on, or miles an hour, depending on your car, and nowadays much faster, with the trust that people who all went in and took a quick test and have a little thing in their wallet saying they're qualified aren't going to just turn into them at any given moment. 3,000, 4,000 something people die every day on highways around our country. Like, we already trust the craziest idea ever, if you think about it. Like, let's just take it, the world in a vacuum. You say, all right, I'm going to jump to the year 2014, and the year previous was, I don't know, let's say it was 1800. It's all horses. We jump to 2014, and we say, let's say it this way. We're still in the 1800s, but we have the technology of 2014 suddenly. We say, all right, now everyone gets a car. Boom, go. No way that passes muster. Or even better, say we did horses all the way up to 2014 and suddenly we introduce cars. The kind of society we live in now where everyone's got so many rules, regulations, and cautions and everything else, the very idea of what we do on roads with cars would seem insane, yeah. I think.
I bet you when fast forward 50 years into the future, our robot overlords would be saying, I can't believe they let you idiot humans let loose with cars. No wonder you killed so many.
Yeah, exactly. You guys had how many thousand people die a day? That's, how did you allow this? I mean,
it's less than you, mate.
Right. But, you know, that kind of thing is fascinating to me. And maybe I'm arguing against my own position on the self-driving car thing now that I think about it. Because, you know, I can't believe we're letting people do this. I can't believe I'm allowed to some days, you know?
You heard what Paul was getting
at. The other thing, Nick kind of touched on it before, but one of the cool things about this is the LEDs in it, so that you can create any old configuration on the solar panels as you want. And the example that they showed is like a sports court, which I think is a really good use for this, and then it could change to like a football field, a basketball field, or baseball field, whatever you want to do. I thought that was really cool for like kind of schools, and it'd be a way of generating income for schools as well. And my second thought is, in most...
Oh, what a shame we didn't get the second thought. Oh. That's what you get for having a shit bandwidth.
Too many
thoughts. Need some solar panels down there.
Do you know the thing I thought about, actually, which is clearly about the dark side of where my brain works? Actually, what happens when the hackers get hold of it? What would they then program into the surface and stuff?
Exactly.
If we're on the cynical side, how long until Google starts selling ads on it?
I was just about to say directions to the nearest Taco Bell. There we go.
And we can think about their recent SEC filing that got everyone all riled up, and I said, I mean, we could put ads on, say, thermostats.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I hadn't thought about other cement structures, though, that you just mentioned. That's kind of brilliant. And tops of buildings, for that matter. Like,
yeah.
Just imagine a big city, New York or London or something, where you've got a lot of surface area right now that is nothing but vents and, you know.
And you get a little tiny bit more energy as well because you're higher up, inverse square law applies. Yeah.
That's true, and that adds up. And
then you could have a massive, massive, massive advertising screen across the entire top of the city.
Well, you've got to use...
We get well over here and McDonald's over there and...
You've got to use the roof space in New York because you get sod all light down at the ground floor. It's getting close to Fifth Element type of density on the lowdown level, isn't it? We'll just finish off that story with a picture that was in Forbes magazine, and it's a picture of a solar panel road with graphics and stuff appearing on it. And I just love the fact that the caption underneath was, this image has been photoshopped. No shit, Sherlock.
Yeah, thanks for letting us know.
The whole article talks about...
Live in a time where everything is suspect, but I feel like that one didn't really need to be pointed out.
Oh, and that's actually...
Page 3 should have that warning on it, not a picture of a hypothetical future technology.
That is actually the High Street as well, from Back to the Future 3.
Oh, yeah. Fantastic.
Well, it's not, but I just...
Hoverboard
beams. That one's good, by the way. I know I'm alone in this, but I hate 2 and I love 3. 3 is awesome.
Yeah. Well, of course. Do you know about the Seth MacFarlane thing, don't you?
What?
You know that it's he's in Seth MacFarlane's new movie as Doc Brown.
No way.
Yeah.
For real?
Yeah,
Is it not just Christopher Lloyd as a kind of an elderly cowboy?
Yeah, but
there as Doc Brown.
Yeah, there's kind of connotations of Doc Brown with it, yeah.
No way. That's awesome. Cool. That's the West he ended up staying in. That's amazing. Okay, so I may have to push past all the terrible reviews and actually see that movie now.
Yeah. Scott, what story have you got for us, mate?
So mine is just a kind of a general thing. It's not so much in the news as it is a general feeling amongst the gaming press. And I'm a enthusiast. I like video games a lot. My biggest podcast is one about a very specific video game, and I feel like I've been playing them ever since my dad owned arcades here in the Salt Lake Valley, and I love them. I love video games. And every year when E3 rolls around, I get real excited. Out come the big companies with their big guns, and they announce big things, and It's always fun, and I'm still looking forward to that particular part of the spectacle coming next week. But there is definitely a feeling in the air this year that no one's really talking about, and I don't know why. Some are, but I'm only hearing it mostly in like the enthusiast press and podcasts and things like that. People talking about how the industry is seeing a very, very large, almost seismic change this year that, again, is kind of going off as it's kind of just slipping past everyone as an elephant in the room that they're all trying to ignore. And that is that games are no longer this tentpole thing. They kind of are, but they're kind of changing where Sony and Microsoft and Nintendo get out and they compete and they're the only games in town. And it's the only thing you can do, you know. 8 years ago could not be more different than today in terms of that that whole space. Independent development is huge right now. You can publish on a myriad of platforms and be one guy in a garage again. We've kind of gone back to the 70s in that way, which is great. I'm pro this. I'm super excited about this. But I feel like the days are coming, and maybe this next week will be emblematic of that, where you're not going to see even a need for something like E3 anymore. Instead, companies, big ones even, will continue to do or start to do the things like Blizzard has with BlizzCon, which is its own dedicated convention all around their own IPs. There's no value to some developers, especially those who are strapped for cash, to go and exhibit for extremely insane amounts of money at a convention like Electronic Entertainment Expo, when they could likely connect with their fans directly and have their own kind of small convention someplace, small to large to huge. Take a card, you know, from, again, BlizzCon or the old QuakeCons or even what MineCon is now for Minecraft, and start to no longer need an industry press event like E3. It already feels like it doesn't need to be here, and I'm not sure why it kind of still exists. And so you're seeing like Nintendo this week or this coming week, they're not doing a press conference. And that's a huge thing that they're not doing that. They're skipping that and they're doing something else. And it's all very small and low level. You could argue it might be because Nintendo's in kind of a weird restructuring position right now with the Wii U sales and everything else. But Microsoft and Sony, you even get the impression they're doing the big show because that's what you do. And if you don't, well, then somehow everything gets lessened. So you may as well be there because you want to be there. But it's this kind of, we used to have a story called The Trip to Aberdeen, my mom used to tell me about, which is this idea that a bunch of people are sitting around bored and somebody says, well, let's drive to Aberdeen. And everyone goes, yeah, let's do that. But nobody really wants to go there. But they all hop in a car and go anyway. And they have a terrible time. It's sweaty. It's hot. They get awful burgers. Everyone feels sick. They come home and they all wish they hadn't gone. But they'll do it again next year because nobody wants to say anything. And I feel like that's kind of the state of things, whereas the independent spirit of indie games, platforms like Steam, and even to a large degree what Sony's doing with the PlayStation 4, Microsoft to a lesser extent with the Xbox One, and other platforms are, and mobile especially, don't forget mobile, iOS and Android, these things have saturated the market and disrupted it enough to make me question whether we need the giant song and dance that costs billions of dollars and nets people I don't know how much. It may get them a mention in Forbes magazine, you may get mentioned in an article in, I don't know, the Wall Street Journal or The Guardian, but was it worth the $25 million you spent to put a stage presentation on for who? The most cream of the crop interested people at home and some press, and that's it. Like, you're not really connecting with your players the way that, say, PAX or something else might. So I just feel in my guts, and this is my prediction, that this may be one of the last E3s we see, at least in its current form. Within the next 2-3 years, we're going to see that either change into something completely different or possibly go away. It'll be the Comdex of the 20 teens, in my humble opinion.
Paul, I mean, you're the host of our gamer show. What's your feeling on it?
Yeah, I think it's a fair point. I mean, Nintendo weren't there last year. They're not there this year. Sony's not really talking about very much. I don't think we've had anything from Sony, really, in terms of big game titles, other than sort of their remastering of... I've completely, the name is completely blanked just now.
Last of Us. You actually bring up another point too. They're not really peppering the press with any new announcements. All we've really gotten out of Sony proper is a couple of delays, which are never good. Yep. They're good for the games, they're not necessarily good for news. And then what you have around the event are a bunch of big, giant AAA titles being announced previous to the show actually happening. It makes me wonder, there's either one or two things going on here. If you're going to, like, if Ubisoft is going to blow all their good news a week or two before the actual event, what on earth do they have to talk about at the event? So it either has to be a seismically amazing announcement at the event because they got all the other stuff out of the way that is already normally huge. So that's either the case, or they're just trying to preempt this before it becomes a giant ball of confusion and news that that people are getting overlooked in or whatever. Would Far Cry 3 fare better as a stage presentation or better as something peppered in the blogs and then mentioned again on stage again? Yeah. Like, I feel like they're all preempting this as a way to say, well, let's get ahead of the news cycle before it gets loud and noisy. But then when you actually get to the event, and this is my whole point, you get to the event, you've got nothing else to show or say that's big, that's huge,
But Scott, so
that's
the
whole point,
Here's a thought then. Is the trade show dying, yes or no? That's one discussion. But it struck me this year that I think there's a negativity within the way that trade shows are reported by the press. No one's really excited about being there. No one comes through as being, this is the event they've looked forward to going to all year. And one of the things we did this year at Macworld was we live streamed a floor show walk for 3 hours. We had 100 people in the chat room asking us where to go. The downloads that we got, 40,000 downloads of people looking at the live stream, and people writing in saying it was like I was there on the show going around with you. And we've had people say they want to go next year because of the coverage that we gave. Mm. And I think there's a jaundiced media that's causing the problem with trade shows a lot more than the trade shows themselves. Although, yes, expense is an accepted factor, obviously. But the trade show's got to work that out. And one of the things I said to Paul Kent is, I think that Macworld has never been more relevant because of what goes on around Macworld and because of what goes on with the media and the way the media then broadcasts Macworld. It's not necessarily the person that comes and stands at your stands and places an order for thousands and thousands of dollars worth of stuff. It's the fact that, if you've got an excited press, you attract thousands of people to what was there who couldn't be there.
Well, part of it, too, is that you took a very excitable position as enthusiast press, and you went there and did a thing that nobody else was doing. None of the big press were doing.
No.
So what you are, to me, is you're emblematic of the change, and the change is across the board. It is mostly facilitated by the way the internet works these days. But what is a podcast but a more personal, direct connection to somebody who enjoys it and therefore gets the content they want the way they want it? They have direct feedback in it. They have ways of shaping that show as a listener, as opposed to, you're not going to get anything done if you're trying to get on the Today Show or something. So I feel like that's the way it is also with games. The independent games are starting to provide experiences at much lower cost to the end user, at much lower cost to their actual budget, using Kickstarter, using other things that involve the community. They're doing things that are more them directly to players. That isn't true of EA, where it's EA and a billion lawyers and a billion other people and a ton of staff being laid off constantly and then being rehired and then shoving something out too early and then having it crap out. And the end user gets lost in that. They're not considered part of the process. And because everything else is being more and more molded into this specialized process, you walking the floor and involving your viewers and listeners in a way that others aren't doing it, then you start to question the idea of, well, what's the point of having a mainstream network? What if the BBC or CBS or NBC or somebody went there and did the coverage? Is it good? Yeah, probably, but it's not going to be that kind of special attention you gave it. And I feel that's emblematic of the larger problem, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think Macworld as well is sort of become sort of a fan conference more than anything else. And I think that's the difference. I think with E3, it's still very much a suit, and your big names are there, your Microsofts, your Sonys, your Ubisofts and all that kind of stuff. And in the main, with very few exceptions in my personal opinion, those big names are generally just bringing out, almost cookie cutter versions of the game. Sure, they're changing it ever so slightly and things like that. I mean, like the new Lord of the Rings game looked really good, but that's primarily because I liked Assassin's Creed 2, and it's essentially Assassin's Creed 2 and Lord of the Rings. And you're not getting that kind of new stuff coming out anymore, and you're not getting the fan base and things like that are necessarily just wanting to go and see this brand new game coming out, because in my opinion it's kind of cookie cutter. And if you take the kind of the indie things, and I think that's maybe where it needs to go, and I think you've got a point, Scott. it needs to go to this idea like Macworld, where it's almost an indie conference. And you're seeing all these cool new ideas coming up as startups and things like that. Because one of the big things I felt in Macworld was that it was a very level playing field, with the exception of two relatively big booths, but they weren't huge. It was a it was a level playing field. You had a bunch from the Ukraine doing this kind of face app thing, and they were clearly just a little startup, and they had the same amount of space as some of the other big, I'm not going to name names for fairness, but some of the other kind of sort of medium-sized to bigger type software houses. And I think something like that, I think, needs to happen.
Leveling that playing field a little bit, you know? Not that any of that has to be forced. I think the market will take care of it. But, players want to connect with their games and their technology or whatever in a more personal way. And they can do that through these companies opening themselves up that way. And going to an event like PAX is a much more healthy thing for somebody to do if they really want to expose their game to who the end user is, than it would be to rent exorbitant amount of costly space at something like E3 and compete for stage time at E3 and that sort of thing. They're not going to get the benefit there than they would for the much less expensive and better exposure they're going to get at PAX or something like that.
Right, so you've got a point.
Well, it's been a bugbear of mine for a couple of years. It's when I was young and I'm a Street Fighter 2 kind of guy, is games were kind of premiered in arcades, and we started in arcades, and that was the kind of way we went. And that has gone away so badly. And it was such a great social kind of idea that, you know, Street Fighter 2, we should kind of queue up and take on the next guy and do that sort of thing. And it's particularly like I go to the arcades I used to go to as a child and as a teenager, and they're all fruit machines now because there's no kind of thing, no kind of social element. They don't think they're going to make any money out of them. They're charging £3 or £4 a go and that sort of thing. That is where the games were promoted. It was, you don't need a big show. You need a social kind of element, a social environment where these games are being promoted. And, you know, I'm in the day, like I said, Street Fighter 2, Mortal Kombat, originally, you know, I'm an old guy. That was the way that the kind of game were promoted. You can't do it in a big show. You do it in a kind of environment where people are crowded around and they're playing the game and they're seeing the way that other people play it and that sort of thing. That's the way that games should be promoted. I've got an Xbox and all that sort of thing. I'm a real console hater, because when the Super Nintendo came out, I was kind of like, I don't want console level gaming at home, because I want to do it in a social kind of context. Sure. Because it's more important that you kind of do it with people sharing the experience. And it's more that it's just a guy sitting with a headset on, and he's talking to someone remotely. He's talking to some 13-year-old kid who's swearing, and it's a horrible thing now. And I think gaming has become so unsociable that it should go back to that sociable kind of way of promoting it.
Yeah.
Oh, just this last weekend, me and Sam and Chiz, the other two guys who do the Gamer Show, we tried to organize with like all of our close friends a session. We've got TVs together and projectors and things like that, and we were going to play like a Halo session. And you know, we'd all gotten day passes from our wives and things like that, and we collected together at a house, and nobody turned up. And everybody's argument was, well, why would I do that? I can do it on Xbox Live. And it was like, no, we're going to have beers, we're going to have crisps. And I think it was like seven of us in the end, and we'd originally invited 16. That could be because nobody likes us, but you know, we're going to just gloss over.
Didn't ask me.
Well, there's a real swing back toward couch co-op and couch competitive play these days, which I think is a good thing. There's a lot of games, again, coming from indie sources mostly, but you know, games like Towerfall, which I have been, which unfortunately launched the same weekend as Titanfall, and it's very confusing on the names. But anyway, Towerfall on the PS4, we used to be on the Ouya. It was the only thing that Ouya was ever good for, was that game. That is an insane amount of fun for four people to do on a couch together competitively. It is really, really good. And I feel like there is a trend toward people trying to recapture that experience. And there is some pushback with, you know, Xbox Live is at times nothing more than, a corralled up bunch of 14-year-olds saying terrible, horrible, racist things to each other.
I hate the co-op thing online. It's absolutely horrible. I think, no offense for anyone, I think we all remember the time where you went to arcades and you played games with people, actual people. And that's probably the most enthralling part
well,
of gaming.
Well, you still do, they're just not in front of you.
This remote kind of gaming is absolutely horrible in a way. It's kind of sitting there in your own little world and doing your little thing. Your wife's looking at you going, what the hell are you doing? And it was that kind of camaraderie kind of thing. And the new game would come out and they got the new Mortal Kombat kind of cabinet in the arcade and you'd all flock to go and see it and that kind of thing. That was the best way that gaming was, but it's lost now. It's completely lost.
But we,
yeah, I completely agree.
Mr. Wheatley, how did the weekend go?
You've got the console in your pocket now, basically, because, you know, a lot of
people... It's sort of, how did the weekend go? How did it end?
Yeah.
Did you have a good time? Well, basically, there were seven of us, and we all sat and played Mario Kart 8 pretty much constantly.
Sounds so fun right now.
Sorry,
Nick. That sounds amazing. That sounds like an amazing thing right now.
Sorry, Nick, I cut across you there, mate. I do apologize.
No, no, it's good. No, it just kind of seems to me from I love games. I don't get into them as much as you guys clearly do, but I kind of wonder about the democratization effectively of the gaming side of things. You know, everybody who's walking around with a phone has got effectively that console now in their pocket. And, you know, I'm kind of curious just to see, are you still seeing the same levels of kind of entry into the console market? Because clearly that's where the big platforms are. Or are you finding there's this kind of fragmentation of the kind of the youth now are just picking up phones and playing these freemium type things and the sort of money just isn't there? Because that kind of seems symptomatic what you're saying. If nobody can do it or nobody's doing it, you sort of follow the money. And if the money's not there, clearly something's sort of effectively breaking the model.
Both consoles. So in my opinion, PCs and mobile have kind of disrupted consoles in a pretty fierce way. And they've done it through services like Steam, the iOS App Store, Android Play, and so on. And they've done it because what they've said is, hey, what it would be like for you to buy really inexpensive games almost every day because they just keep coming out. There's something new every day. There's some viral thing everyone loves. There's a lot of crap, but, you know, you're going to sift through it. You're going to find the stuff you like. There's, you know, top lists, whatever. And you're going to play something new more frequently on your own time. Sometimes more casually, but the games and the experiences are going to be there. Steam offers that. Mobile offers that. Consoles are not offering that. They're offering, oh man, one big AAA title every 5 months and once in a while some other indie. But guess what? That indie was already on mobile or already on Steam or somewhere else before this anyway. So they're kind of Johnny come latelys. Like, it's just a slower process. They have got to change that. Now, Sony seems like they understand that, but they've yet to really go for it. So that the release schedule on there is constant, letting people self-publish independent titles, fill in those gaps. Because if they don't, those gaps are being filled in on other platforms, and those other platforms are not owned by Microsoft and Sony, or Nintendo for that matter. So it is I feel like it's precarious times for them because they are behind that eight ball. And these other platforms understand that. They've changed the way people game. And for good or for ill, that is the new world we live in. And if they want to keep up, they've got to release more stuff than they do right
now.
Yeah,
I agree. I mean, the thing that fascinates me, though, is the kind of the hardware that comes with the console. So some of the Kinect side of things is fascinating. So my sons absolutely love, they're playing this Force Star Wars type thing at the moment. And they rampage around the living room controlling Rancors and stuff. And that looks awesome fun. I play it with them, too. And that speaks to the strength of the device. You know, you just cannot recreate that. So... I mean, okay, admittedly, that's probably not one of your chart games that you guys are used to playing, but they absolutely love it. They can't get enough of it. And they're, you know, 2 hours in and they're sort of, you know, taking their shirts off and sweating like dogs for the time. So, you know, it plays to the strength of what it's good at. And this is where it feels like they've not lined the games up because you're right. A lot of the stuff that you do, the kind of console ones where you're going to first person, you can equally play that on the PC or a laptop or actually now even on the iPad. But things like that immersive body control type stuff, that feels like a differentiator, and you can't really recreate that so easily.
Wait, just finish the words. Finish yourself, mate.
So the Xbox, though, it's actually selling better than the Xbox 360 did in the first 3 months, in the US, certainly. So while I agree with all the points that's been said there, it doesn't appear to be affecting the actual console sales, the actual hardware sales. People are still buying them for whatever reason. I don't know whether it's because of kind of the Titanfalls and your Call of Duties and your FIFAs and all that kind of stuff. But for me, I probably fall somewhere in between the casual gamer and the hardcore gamer. I like all the hardcore games, but I'm quite a big fan of iOS games and things like that as well. And there's just no replacement, in my opinion, for a decent joypad. No touchscreen device gives you that experience of like an Xbox 360 controller.
Yeah, I agree entirely with that. And thankfully, you know, I don't think any of this is going anywhere real soon. And I actually think the market will just curb to whatever players want to do. I just hope they're listening because it does it does mean the future of their companies. And with Sony ailing in every other department except PlayStation, that, you know, they need this to really kick it or they're in trouble. Their TV division is down. Everything's down at Sony. So it would be nice to see them follow through on all this goodwill they've had for the last year. Last E3, they came out strong. They changed a lot of gamers' hearts and minds. They're way ahead in the console fight when it comes to this new generation of consoles. For them to maintain that and keep strong, I just hope they know what the market is doing and follow suit.
I mean, I've talked to Paul about this. I think there's a stupidity in that process, though, because they're holding back compatibility between the previous platform and the current platform that sale to try and promote sales of the current platform. But I said to Paul, if they told me that my Xbox 360 games could play on the Xbox One, then I would have bought one on day one. As it is, I don't want two consoles in my house. I don't want two consoles by the stack that I've got by the TV. So I'm not going to buy one until they give me that ability to be compatible with it. I'm going to hold off and hold off and hold off until I don't play any of the 360 games anymore. And if they'd have said, right, to promote sales of the console, we're going to make it backwards compatible with your games, sold. I'd have bought it on day one. The other two would have gone on the skip and landfill would have been used. Which would have been a bad environmental thing, I know, but...
No, melt them down and make roads out of them. It's fine.
Exactly.
But, I mean, I've used my... Since I got my Xbox One, I've used my 360 much more because, well, frankly, there's just not... I don't think there's the breadth of... Well, there definitely isn't the breadth. It's not had the time. But there's not the breadth of games that I desperately want to play on the Xbox One yet. And my 360, I've went back and I've started to play Red Dead Redemption again because that is an awesome game and that's 4 years old.
Yeah. Love it.
And I'm still playing through a second time Grand Theft Auto 5, and I don't want to move away. And I think the other element is the cost as well. So the Watch Dogs that just came out, I got on the PC, and it's exactly the same game. And my gaming PC is probably twice or thrice as powerful as my Xbox One. Mm-hmm. Maybe not, I'm exaggerating, but the point is, it's half the price for a buy, Watch Dogs on the PC.
Yeah,
that's true.
Good discussion.
I don't know. We'll see how it goes next week, man.
Bart, what did you bring for us, mate?
I brought some nerdiness to the game, shall we say. I was going to say if you remember it so long ago, but it's not long ago at all. It was early April. We all had the big, when OpenSSL had the Heartbleed vulnerability. Mm. And that was kind of scary. And so it's slowly kind of sort of patched their SSL. And it's kind of happened again. Not quite as extreme. This particular problem is harder to exploit. But there is another big bug in OpenSSL, which in theory allows attackers to decrypt what really should be encrypted traffic and what our browsers and our mail clients and everything else tells us is encrypted safe traffic. I guess to me what this story underlines is the importance of a new initiative by the Linux Foundation, which they're calling their Core Infrastructure Initiative. And the first projects they have picked out to be in need of sort of investment for the point of making the whole internet safer is NTP, which has recently been used in botnet attacks, OpenSSH, which kind of makes a lot of stuff go, and OpenSSL. So,
What's the mode of failure though?
So when you're doing an SSL connection, you have to negotiate what cryptography is going to be used because different clients and different servers will support different ciphers. And this vulnerability requires there to be a man in the middle, which is why it's harder to exploit, because the attacker has to be, say, on your network or in the same coffee shop or something like that. Mm. And they interfere with the negotiation to trick the client into choosing ciphers, insecure keys and ciphers, basically, which allows, effectively what they're doing is they're making the crypto way weaker so they can break it.
Right.
All I know is I'm so glad I'm not a guy who understands any of that stuff because I want my world to be secure, but I don't like knowing when I find out it isn't, like something's got a vulnerability or somebody's hacked something, I kind of cave into myself because I know there's nothing I can do about it.
Well, there's not nothing though. That's kind of something else that sort of came out of the Heartbleed thing. So if you're using a password manager, which you kind of sort of have to in this day and age if you want to be secure, the trend now on password managers, LastPass have done it and 1Password have done it, is that they will keep a list of sites with problems. So they'll basically check out the internet to make sure stuff is safe. And then if you go to save a password for an insecure site or go to use their plugin to log into an insecure site, your password manager will pop up wearing, say, by the by, this site is blah, 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 blah. And so, you know, in that case, you can do something if you're using a good password manager. They're looking out for you.
Yeah. Like some of that stuff you can, you know, you talk to smart people and whatever. But like when somebody comes out and goes, oh, guess what? For the last 15 years, nothing was secure. Turns out it was all fake and they can retroactively go do everything they want. I just go, okay, that's the world
that
we live in.
Often.
See you guys next week. Late, like, I don't know what I'd do. I just wouldn't know what to do.
I mean, my next question to you, Bart, was going to be, what is the scale of the problem of this vulnerability then?
Well, again, it's OpenSSL. So the last time it affected clients and servers, this time it's servers only, which, well, that's kind of where most of the attack surface is anyway, to be honest. So it's only servers that are running OpenSSL and a certain version of it. So you're possibly talking about maybe like only 20% of the internet or something.
Right.
Okay. Which isn't that particularly nice only. Maybe less, maybe only 10%.
It's good size.
Yeah. But really, what makes this one not don't put your hair on fire is that someone has to physically, networkily, whatever the internet equivalent of physicality is, they got to get between you and the server so they can interfere with that communication. So that makes it harder.
Good. We like that.
Yep.
We like harder, definitely.
Yeah.
No. We nearly.
That's what she said.
But you should be.
As the actress said.
Oh, shut up. We need a security show, Bart. You should do one for us, mate.
If there were 28 hours in the day, I would love to do something like that.
We'd love
That's what she said.
Thank you.
.com.
Righty, what have you got for us, mate?
Well, I'm going to be even more nerdy.
And, Jesus.
I'm kind of hoping Bart might kind of chime in with this as well. The fact that TrueCrypt disappeared this week.
Was that a game?
It kind of did and it didn't, though, didn't it?
Well, it kind of did and it didn't. Hands up, who knows what TrueCrypt is?
My hand's way down.
No hands at all. Oh, dear.
Just the two of us.
So TrueCrypt is an open source drive encryption service. It's an open source thing. And this week, we use it at work. We use it to encrypt all our drives. It's cross-platform, Linux, Mac, and all that sort of thing. This week, the site went down and said, actually, TrueCrypt is not secure. It may contain unfixed security issues, which is a little bit worrying because a lot of people use it.
Scott's gone under the bed with a tin hat.
I'm really paranoid now.
The warning is badly worded. Well, it's
exactly. The warning is really badly because it actually points you to BitLocker on Microsoft, which is really, really bad kind of thing.
Mm. So,
I'm kind of hoping Bart will pair with me on this one as a security kind of thing.
Well, no, it is a security thing. So what the warning says is in bright red, warning, using TrueCrypt is not secure as it may contain unfixed security issues. But that's actually a standard disclaimer on any piece of unsupported software, because the moment something goes out of development, every bug that's found goes unfixed. So anytime you have a download of something that's not being actively developed, you should have that warning on it. But because it's just like that one sentence, people lost their head.
They did. Yeah. But then they found out that all the developers of TrueCrypt were anonymous as well, didn't they? So no one actually thought to think, actually, they're well-renowned developers and that sort of thing, but they're all anonymous developers, and there may be all these sort of backdoors and things into the actual system, isn't there?
Well, because no, it's open source, so we don't need to know who the developers are. We can look for, we don't need to know how trustworthy they are. We can see the code.
Yeah. But I think the main thing is it got shut down so quickly, but I was talking to a couple of people this week, and it was because of some audit that some university had asked for, and they'd... They'd found some back doors in it, and it got shut down straight away. But it's such a widely used thing, and like you're talking about the OpenSSL thing, because obviously, what is the future of kind of open source kind of products? Because this is another thing that's kind of open source has actually gone down.
Well, I don't know. I wouldn't read too much into this kind of thing, because you certainly don't want to go down the road of saying, well, open source is definitely dead because look at Heartbleed, because then I can point you to 20 million closed source problems. Mm. The thing with open source is an open source project is as strong or as weak as its community. And the open source projects that do well are the ones that have foundations around them, have organizations of people. If you look at the Apache Foundation, they do fantastic work. They have really sound products. The Linux Foundation, again, really sound products. But, you know, there's the contrast between a well-supported open-source project and a guy in a shed typing away on a keyboard is immense, but everyone sort of lumps the whole lot under open source. And if something goes terribly, horribly wrong on the few amateurs in the garage, people assume that that means that the whole open source idea is wrong. Open source isn't open source.
Yeah, but the thing that worries me, if you go to TrueCrypt, the website now on SourceForge, they're kind of redirecting you to kind of Microsoft and all that sort of thing. And for the people who are actually using it as their encryption, it is a really worrying kind of thing, because then they're thinking, because we use it, I work for a research institution, and we're kind of thinking, actually, have we got reversed everything? Because
My question was going to be, righty, once you've encrypted with TrueCrypt, is all of that data then constantly encrypted? How do you decrypt and have a clean copy to then store elsewhere to get rid of the vulnerability?
Well, this is the thing. There are some instructions on the TrueCrypt website about how to go back. I think if I actually double check, but they're kind of like, it was a really weird thing, because it was kind of like, yeah, we use it, we do, yeah. So top of the website says, warning, TrueCrypt is not secure and may contain unfixed security issues. And then the first thing they tell you is to use BitLocker on Microsoft. And I'm thinking, has Microsoft got something to do with this? Because it's kind of the first thing you see. If you go to the bottom of the page, it does go, if you're on another system, obviously Mac and Linux, it goes through that kind of thing. But it's just a really worrying thing, because the reason we use TrueCrypt is because it's a cross-platform encryption. So obviously where I work, we use Mac, Linux, and Windows. So that's the reason we use it, because it's cross-platform. And we're now sitting there going through, we're not sure of the reasons why they've discontinued support and why they've shut it down. Two, is the support we've already got, is it still valid? And number three, what do we do next? Because there is, and a lot of analysts have already said, there is no kind of free open source alternative out there at all. So people who are relying on this, who kind of work in the open source community, there is no really kind of enterprise level open source support for encryption anymore. And literally, it went down at the weekend, and there's no explanation. And it's absolutely terrifying. We've got, you know, a certain organization that I know has a lot of encryption using TrueCrypt.
Well, the thing is, every OS, be it Linux, Windows, or Mac, there is native full disk encryption now. The days when you had to use a third party to get disk encryption are over. So that means that the actual need for TrueCrypt has really gone down, because I'm not aware of there being a security problem with BitLocker. It's in versions of Windows. OS 10 has File Vault 2, which, again, I'm not aware of there being any problems with.
Well, and they're fine, but they're not cross. They're not compatible across operating systems. That's the problem.
Okay, but do you need the one system? I mean, your Windows machine is encrypting your your boot drive should be encrypted by your OS, in my opinion. So if you have a Mac, you should be using File Vault on that. If you have a Linux machine, you should be using encrypted ext4 on that. If you have a Windows machine, you should be using FileLocker on that. The only time you need something cross-platform...
We share files with other organizations. That's the problem. And they may not be BitLocker. Yeah, they may be Mac organizations or using Linux. That's where our problem is. That's why we use TrueCrypt, because we'd send a BitLocker encrypted USB stick out, and there'd be a Mac user.
Righty.
So it's on USB stick, so your removable media is where the problem is, and you're right, that's a bit of an issue. But at least on the most important thing, which is your actual physical hardware, your actual computers, your laptops, at least you have good solutions there.
On your physical media, on your machine, that's absolutely fine. But when you come to this bit in the institution that I work in, it's enterprise and research, so there's a lot of data sharing, and it is across all of the major operating systems. And TrueCrypt was the major kind of cross-platform encryption, because it works on all systems, Linux, Mac, and Windows. We're now kind of scratching our heads right now, going, what the hell do we do? Do we carry on with TrueCrypt? Because I know there's some open source developers trying to kind of bring it back and look at the source code. There's actually no problems with it. The thing that worries everybody is why it got shut down. Are they being investigated? Is it an NSA kind of thing? Or
Righty, 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 righty.
I have a feeling about I have a theory about why they got shut down. They're anonymous. These guys probably have day jobs, and you're going to get complete numpties like me who don't understand one thing that's being said to you, going, hello, I encrypted my drive with TrueCrypt and forgot the password. Can you help me? And they're just getting sick of those kind of things, and they're just going away, and they've just given up. They're just going, you know what? I am not dealing with these numpties who chuck encryption software on the machine and have got absolutely no idea what to do when it encrypts. It's encrypted.
It makes you wonder why they started in the first place, isn't it?
They're definitely getting a lot of trouble with that kind of stuff. But add to that the fact that they had this audit, and the audit was, it was widely reported as good news because the audit said there's no major problem here.
Yeah, no bad.
But the audit did go on to say, but actually this code is really badly architected and you'll probably have to rewrite an awful lot of it to make it really properly safe. Mm. That's a really big ask. And if you're living in a world where, okay, well, the main use for these kind of things is to encrypt your laptops and stuff, and your laptop has an OS and that OS has encryption. So you're kind of thinking to yourself, if you're a volunteer, and these are all volunteers, they're not making money off this, an awful, awful lot of work to do. There's an awful lot of scrutiny coming on your encryption at the moment. Why are we doing this? Is it worth giving up our lives to as volunteers? And my guess is they went, actually, do you know what? No, it isn't.
But more importantly, how many times do you think the guy on the bouncy thing in the chat room failed before they actually managed to get those trousers on?
Righty, you're supposed to bring a story, not your personal problems. Save that for the help show.
Oh, this is not the help show.
No, this is not the help show, dude. Jesus.
I'm ever so sorry, man.
Help show's back next Wednesday. On that point, actually, I would like to say the help show is on Wednesdays, every other Wednesday, and there's one next week. We stuck the iOS show out. Not the iOS show, Christ, that's going back. We stuck the Pocket show out on the Mac show feed last week. Only one person wrote in and said, where's the Mac show? Because Paul did put a rather comprehensive message at the start. Have a go and listen to some of the other shows, because they're all really good. It's not just one or two shows, so please go and have a try.
Gamer Show is really good.
Gamer Show is excellent. Gamer Show is great if you're into gaming. But give it a go. Try all the other shows, and if you don't like them, fine. Don't subscribe, but do them a go. The Bash is coming up. The Bash is it's a month away, pretty much. Month and 5 days. 11th of July, we've got a curry night. The tickets for that are going pretty quickly, actually. So I would suggest that in 3 weeks' time, you will not be able to get a ticket for that, because we'll be full. So I would dive in as soon as you can for the curry. It's £10 for the curry, but that's a deposit. You get that back against the bill. The bill is divided equally amongst everyone that's there. If you're going to come along and count at what you add, then don't bother coming, please, because that's not going to work. It's just a straight and simple thing. Whatever we order, whatever comes out, we're going to dole all the money out, and all the £10 are going to come off the price of the bill, and then we'll split it. On the 12th, it's the Bash. Tickets are still going for that as well. I think you will get a ticket in 3 weeks for that one, because we're not filling up as fast. We can do 200 people, and we had 75 there last year, which was great. I think we're probably going to get past that this year, but I don't think we can get up to 200. But it's £25. We may have a sponsor, in which case the tickets will come down in price, and anyone who's paid £25 will get their £5 back. But don't let that stop you from buying a ticket, because I'll give you your £5 back if we do get the sponsor covered. The ticket will cover everything. It's a family day. It covers for the rental of the place that we're going to, which is a beautiful, beautiful village hall and garden down in the local village. And it covers all your food and all your drinks for the whole day, and all your entertainment and all your fun as well. And we'll be doing a couple of podcasts from there and having a load of fun. Is there a gamer show quiz this time, Paul?
I might do a quiz. Chiz and Sam aren't coming down, but I don't know. We'll see what happens. I think I'm going to do something in Pocket terms based. Of the quiz, but it might not be just gaming. It might be everything. I don't know.
Pocket show.
It's just a nugget of an idea at the moment. We'll see how it grows and blossoms.
Superb. But that's the tickets. If you go to britishtechnetwork.com/bash tickets, or even on the home banner, and then just click order tickets here, then you will be able to buy them. PayPal is accepted, and it's the only way you can buy them. So there you go. Curry on the 11th, Bash on the 12th, £10 and £25. It's my son's birthday on the day. I've screwed up royally. So please bring him a birthday card if you come into the curry, because I'm an arse. This network is also supported by quite a lot of people. First one is the Network Union. They're absolutely brilliant. They are specialists, if you like, in wide area networks, and they do LAN stuff as well. They'll help you check your system out. They'll give you support and tech support for what's going on in your property as well. But one of their specialisms is to look after your system with BT. So if you're a BT broadband customer, then your relationship's going to stay with them. You're still going to pay your bill to BT and all that kind of stuff. But if you get in touch with the network union, they become an extra layer of support between you and BT. And they'll provide you with a whole load of support. And it won't put your bill up anything. That'll be just that. You can get in touch with them by clicking on the sponsors page on the British Tech Network and have a chat with them, because they know more about what they do than I do. It's really specialised. But if you're a BT broadband customer of any description, then give them a contact and let them know what they can do for you, because they're really, really fine folks, and they give a huge support for our Patreon fund as well. And UK2, of course, because they are the people that we've been with for 4 years, back when bandwidth cost us an absolute bloody fortune. They pick it all up. We have a £400 a month server off them. We have unlimited storage. You can get every show we've ever produced. They're all still online. And they give us unlimited bandwidth, so it doesn't matter how many people download it, it never falls over, it never goes away, and it's thanks to UK2. And also, you get a shed load off your websites, your VPS, your VPN services, dedicated services, co-location services. There's a load of offer codes. If you go to the sponsors page on British Tech Network and look at those codes, you could damn near clear your basket. It's that good. Thank you very much for all of the sponsor support. It means a huge amount to us. And thanks to Martin, who's trying to organise some sponsorship for the bash. If that comes off, we'll all owe him a beer. We'll get a free ticket anyway, that's for sure. Right. Now, I didn't tell Nick and Scott that there was a cool thing. So they may not have anything, but we'll start with the people who do know there should be a cool thing. Mostly Paul Wheatley will kick us off. Have you got anything that's tech that's cool this week that you really want to talk about? Wheaters.
No, sorry, me to start.
Good. Yeah, go for it.
Right, so I got just those of you who follow me on Twitter would have known that we had a massive lightning strike a week past Sunday. It was four houses up from where I live, and to the point that it blew two holes in their roof, and the lightning came down through the telephone line and took out a variety of things in the street. I lost two skyboxes, which for American listeners is, I don't know, it's kind of a Comcast box, it's sort of a TiVo type thing. Two of those, a 42-inch telly, a network-attached storage drive, and a router and my Wii U. So I've been slowly, with house insurance and a variety of other things, getting everything replaced. And just today I decided, so I had like a router that was sort of a middle of the road thing. It was never 100%. I never got signal at the edge of my house. And after spending quite a bit of time chatting to Lee, who's in the chat room, he's Solium on the chat room, and also Slim Shadwell, they managed to convince me to purchase...
Oh, no, we're never going to know what you purchased. Oh, no.
I just set it up this afternoon.
Oh, no.
No, what did you purchase, Paul? Because you cut out at the wrong moment there.
Oh, sorry. I built it up so well. So I bought an Airport Extreme. And I am blown away with how good this thing is and how easy it was to set up. I don't know networking at all. I don't know very much about anything, really. But I can draw pretty pictures of it.
Oh. We're never going to know what you can draw.
It sort of looks like a thermos flask if Apple made one. It's awesome.
I'm sure that's the best endorsement they could possibly wish for, Paul.
Well, it was so easy to set up. I don't do networking or anything like that, and I absolutely loved it. And I am getting incredible lightning speeds, and you wouldn't believe it by my bandwidth on Skype, but I am getting incredible lightning speeds in my Wi-Fi through my house. Normally, I get kind of my broadband speed is about 7 meg down. And my Wi-Fi got about 3.5. And if I was in like my bedroom or one of the rooms kind of that's sort of further away from the center, from the router, I was getting sort of 1.5. And I'm getting 7 meg all over my house, and I'm really chuffed. And I know for those of you that get 30, 40 plus room to spare, I'm getting...
three dad.
Oh, well, there we go. I'll mime and do some sign language for what Paul's talking about later on. I'll get a transcription.
I missed that. What was that?
Yeah, we missed that as well, mate.
That's good. That's good. Just trust me, it was an incredible speech.
Airport Extreme, right? I've actually said I've got an Airport Extreme, and I don't really like it. It's never been brilliant. So I might give that a go, because mine's...
This is one of the new model ones, and Slim Shadwell absolutely, he loved it. He was raving about them and convinced me to sort of spend a bit of money. So
mine's really smoking fast. I love mine.
Okay, that's it. This show always costs me sodding money when we do this bit. I should la la la.
I got really good exchange rate on the euro as well. Even though I got it in Amazon Prime, it came my the little receipt thing came through in euros.
So what was weird. What was the cost?
154
quid.
154 pounds, yeah. When you do the exchange rate and stuff. But cool. Yeah, I think I got quite a good rate on the euro, even though it's bizarre. I don't know why it got charged in euros. It's funny.
Fair enough.
Anyway.
Good man.
It's awesome.
Good pick. Bart, what do you have for us, mate? I hope it's not something you need to show.
I think. Just because. I have been wasting spectacular amounts of my time the last couple of weeks playing what is arguably a silly game from my childhood, but is nonetheless spectacularly good fun, and it is Worms version 3 for iOS and iOS 10.
Oh, I love Worms.
Best.
I've owned every version of Worms they ever made.
Actually. I've played them all. I love them all. Well, Worms 3 has introduced this concept of cards, which really let you mess with the laws of physics for like one turner for the whole game. And so you have to win games to make gold to buy cards, which you can then play to mess with people's heads and stuff, make gravity go away.
Oh, lovely.
Make earthquakes happen, go invisible. Just really cool, fun stuff. So it's added a whole new element to the game. They have the standard. You can now play games between people on the Mac and people on iOS because it's all Game Center integrated now. So it's just hours of fun, and I'm not sure if I should be proud or if I should be sad, but I was recently 76th in the world.
Wow.
Oh my gosh, that's amazing.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Which kind of worried me all at once. I was like, maybe I'm spending too much time with this game. But yeah. I highly recommend it. It's good fun.
And nothing but 10-year-olds in front of you.
Probably.
My son loves it. He absolutely adores Worms. He played it for years.
Team 17, UK company, always knocking that thing out. It's funny because, I mean, they've had a couple of lamers out of that series, but it never mattered. I was happy to just pick them all up all the time.
Yeah, the 2D one was crap, but the 3D one's excellent.
Yeah. Wait a minute, which 3D? The old Xbox and PS2 one, that one was kind of garbage. Not great.
Well, the one on iOS is 2D, isn't it?
It's like 2.5D.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
I had a freebie one or a little tiny, you know, $1.99 in Best Buy type one that I got.
If you want to try something else they make, they've just put out a game on Steam called Flockers, and it's basically Lemmings but with sheep. And it's nice to see them doing something new and different, but also that game's really, really fun. I like it a lot.
Did the sheep blow up? Great.
Yeah, you totally blow sheep up, and it's super violent, just like you want it. You
know, they also do, actually, which is surprisingly fun on iOS. They have, like, Worms Golf.
Yeah, Worms Golf is crazy good.
Yeah.
It's not supposed to be. That should be shite, and it's not. It's fantastic, that game.
A man of the world.
Completely.
Yeah.
Well done. Thanks for the editing this week, Scott. Do appreciate it.
Usually that's me. I'm getting better at not using S words.
Yeah, bastards. Right, Righty, what have you got for us, mate?
Little iOS game, a game called Two Dots. Doesn't look that impressive on the screen. Yeah, it doesn't. It's a little game where you join up dots. It's kind of like Connect Four kind of thing. And you've got to get to a certain, you've got to get so many green dots, blue dots, and red dots. Really addictive. You can kind of go and get combination of things and super moves and that sort of thing. But following my rant from the big show last week, it's a bloody in-app purchase. It's like Candy Crush. It's like you got so far, you can buy four more moves, 69p. It's like, oh, screw you. Yeah. Why can't I just buy a bloody game and enjoy all the features?
I
will give you a couple of quid. Don't give them for free and then beg me for money. But it's a really addictive game, but that little bit of it kind of takes it away for me. But Two Dots is, I think it's kind of editor's pick in the iOS store this week, but a really great addictive game. If you can get past the kind of begging for money and good laugh.
Excellent.
That feels like I should chime in because I did prepare something that I like.
Cool.
Happily share it. It just runs off the back of what we were just saying. So I've been looking at that game. It's actually on iOS. You guys maybe have covered it before, but it's Thomas Was Alone.
Thomas Was Alone is so good.
It's absolutely awesome. I mean, just I also rant and rail against the freemium model where I think this is not a bad game. I wish I could speed it up. Ah, turns out all I need to spend is a bundle of £35 for this crappy little game. so Yeah, no, I it really, really irritates me. So I scoured as much as I could and then came across this and have never looked back. I've been playing it up at night. I'm sort of looking at the clock at 12:30 going, I should be asleep. But look, I could just get the little box and he's going to say something really funny. Like, you know, why is Laura here? You know, it's just, it's beautifully animated. And these guys have got little insecurities as well. So it just, it's a little bit pricey. It's $5.99. But you know what, guys, if you don't like the freemium model, this is the one for you. It's got so much charm. It's like Portal. So yeah, give it a go.
Excellent. Good choice. We like that.
I have something tiny to tell you about. It's real
quick.
Go
for it. Scott.
I bought on Amazon a Anker, A-N-K-E-R, portable Bluetooth 4.0 speaker. It's one of these little Bluetooth, like, you know, cubes that you stick around your house and whatever, and tie your smartphone to it. And usually those are crap, kind of terrible. The a lot of Chinese junk out there that are all kind of saying that they're great and they're not. This was recommended to me by a friend, a co-host of mine on one of my other shows, and I thought I would give it a shot because it was relatively inexpensive, $29.99 US dollars on Amazon. And it's great. Not only does it have Bluetooth, it also has a 3.5 millimeter auxiliary port, so you can just go straight into the thing, and has 10 hours of playtime and sounds wonderful. I was sure I was hearing things when I heard it. You know, you're not going to blow anybody's mind with its... You know, this isn't, you know, Dr. Dre trying to sell you on Beats Audio here, but it's good. It's way better than the competition. And it's really changed things for me. I just love having that thing on, listen to podcasts over it, kind of take it anywhere I want. Highly recommended. It's only $30. It's nice and cheap.
Excellent. My cool thing is this thing here. This is called the S-Dock. Okay. And I've got the S-Dock Pro here. I picked this up at Macworld. And I've had it in the box for a while. I've got to do a review on it because it was given to me as a review unit. But I've been playing with it this week. If I just try and zoom in a little bit. Here we go. Right, the S-Dock is effectively a dock for your iPad. I've got the iPad Air version. And this front bit here is spring-loaded. And when you push it down, you'll see there at the bottom, just in the corner, or just in the middle, there's a lightning connector. And what you do is you take your iPad Air and you fit it in that end, line it up with the lightning connector and push it in. And then you pull this bit over the top and it clamps it in place. So now you've got a holder for your iPad. And also there's a little micro USB thing here that goes in, so it charges it, which is brilliant. And you're thinking, well, okay, but why do you want to hold that? Well, you don't. What you want to do is put it on the mounting ring that they give you at the back, which you attach to the wall, and it gives you a locked turn of 90 degrees. So you can have it in portrait or landscape, and it still charges.
Slight little bucket.
Yeah. So what I've done is I've got it over here on the wall, and it sits and plays... Sky Sports and that kind of stuff with Sky Go, and I just rotate it. And when you take your iPad out, instead of having some unsightly thing that looks crap, you can put a picture of your kids in the back, so it turns into a little photo frame as well. There you go. That's
lovely.
It is. I think it's friggin' expensive.
Oh.
Because they wouldn't give me one.
It looks expensive.
They wouldn't give me two. One for Paul and one for me. So it could be quite expensive. But there you go. S-Dock Pro from Germany. It's a bunch of Germans that do it. But it's absolutely beautiful. I do like it. I will be doing a review. I will be posting the review up on the site. And apparently I've gone red now as well. I didn't bend over or anything, no. There's something gone on there with the auto adjust on the well, sorted. Right, where can we get a hold of you, Scott?
Oh goodness, best place would be I'm all over the place, but Scott Johnson on Twitter is a good place to start because that'll kind of show you what's going on every day. But frogpants.com is where all the shows can be found, all the artwork, all the stuff I'm up to, information about events and show times and schedules and who's part of the network and all that stuff. So if you're into, like, I don't know, 4 days a week morning show, I got that for you. You like World of Warcraft, I got that for you on the weekends. You like tech and pop culture, hey, maybe Tom Merritt and I can do something for you on Fridays with Current Geek. Either way, lots to do, lots to see, and I think frogpants.com is your best place to go.
Good man, excellent. Nick, where are you, sir?
At the great Nick Gray on Twitter. Not a huge Twitter tweeter, but I'm getting
it. I love a modest Twitter name.
Yeah. All the other ones are taken.
Exactly. Chatroom wants to know how long I've had a 25-year-old daughter since her last birthday. Taxi Cab wants to know her name, I think. Wants to look her up.
Mm. Nice. Yeah, hey, I have a 20-year-old, and I'm running into the same problem. I feel your pain, man.
Is it a daughter?
Yeah, I have a 20-year-old daughter. 17-year-old, 20-year-old, and then I have a boy who's 14, and the keeping dirty boys away from the girls has been a lifetime achievement.
My daughter's 5, so I've got 10 years of respite, and then the wheel's going to come off.
Man.
Waiters, where are you, sir?
You can get me at Paul Wheatley on Twitter, and you can get me on the Pocket Show and the Gamer Show on this network, and they record alternate Mondays. So we'll have the Pocket Show this coming Monday, and the Gamer Show was a little bit late coming out this week. I had some audio issues I was trying to solve, so it just came out earlier on today.
Yeah,
where we essentially talk about very little because there's nothing really happening before. Well, everybody. There's nothing really happening as we discussed earlier, so we generally just rate biscuits, to be honest.
Excellent. And you've got to listen to both of those shows because they really are excellent, excellent shows. I can't recommend them highly enough. I listen to them out of choice.
Thank you very much, sir.
Yeah. And Bart, where are you, sir?
Well, you can find me at bartb.ie with his links to like my blog and my Twitter and my Flickr and all those things because no one can spell my surname. So there's no point in my saying I'm at bbushots. That's just pointless. So bartb.ie. And then my two podcasts you will find at let's-talk.ie.
Excellent. I'm trying to put a piece of white paper in front of me camera to get it to go back, get the white balance to change, but it's not working. And last but by no means least, Righty, where are you, boy?
Hello, mate. Paulin's on Twitter and all over this fantastic network that is BritTechNetwork.com and in my greenhouse at the weekend.
You were. You built a greenhouse, weren't you?
I built a bloody greenhouse. You liked my trousers, didn't you?
I did, mate. You built it in your pyjamas. What the hell?
That's how we roll in Norfolk.
That's right. Yeah, yeah. When the sister goes out, build a greenhouse.
Yeah.
Is that the sister that's locked up in the greenhouse?
No, yeah.
All right.
What's the German bloke's name? I can't say it. Can I? Taste. But there we go.
We've already covered that at the Gamer Show, don't worry.
Yeah. Now, if you tuned in tonight to get the Patreon draw, it's not happening tonight. It's happening next week, and it'll be on the Mac Show. But there will be a Patreon draw. We've got Mac Poor Software to give away. I need to double check with them that they're still going to give us the codes. But we've got Mac Poor Software to give away. And also, we've got Ian Lewis gave us that fantastic Jella Skins cover for the iPad Air. We've only got one of those. And I just said to, we're not going to give it to everyone the chance in the Patreon fund, but I said, write in if you've got an iPad Air and you want one. And only two people have written in and said that they've got an iPad Air out of all the people that support us on Patreon. So I'm going to get another one made so you both get one. There you go. I'll pay for that. If you'd like to support us on Patreon, then go to patreon.com/British Tech Network and you can give us whatever you fancy. Just a couple of quid here and a couple of quid there does a pile of difference. It's paid for the stuff that we've got for the green screen here. We've got lighting that's going to go up in here. It's going to support Paul because the Gamer Show and the Pocket Show are going to go to video as well when he gets more bandwidth. And we've got 55 days and counting. More bandwidth for Paul, and it's great. So please give us a donation at Patreon if you possibly can, and it's put to good use. I do promise you, we won't drink it. I'm Ian Rankin. You can get me at Ian Rankin on Twitter. See you next week for the big show, normal time, 8 p.m. on a Thursday, and I'll put it in the calendar this time, and a few more people might turn up. That'll be good.